So we usually have a theme for our retreats here. Or often we have a theme for our retreats, and sometimes we pick a list of one of the various many lists the Buddha has and explore those teachings of that list in a little bit of depth. And this time, Gil, a couple of weeks ago, said, how would you feel about having a sutta, one of the Buddha's teachings, be the theme for the retreat? And he told me which sutta he was interested in, which is a sutta called the Simile of the Cloth. And I was delighted with that idea because about a year ago, I had assigned this text to a group of students and had really enjoyed this teaching and found it to be very inspiring and lively. And unbeknownst to me, Gil has also found this text to be one of his, I don't know if you said favorite, current favorite. So this is the teaching we'll be exploring this week. And so tonight I thought I would just give you a little overview of the teaching, of the text, of the sutta. I won't read it to you, but I'll just kind of give you the broad brush threads. And then each night we'll take a piece of this text and explore it in a little more depth. So part of the reason I like this text is because it kind of lays out a whole path of practice for us. So it's a kind of a complete teaching in and of itself. It begins, or it depends on which version of the text you're reading, whether it begins or ends with this story, but there is a story associated with the teaching. And the Buddha was in a group of his monks and some other people who were coming to listen to him speak. And one of the people in the group asked him if he ever went to the river Bahuka to bathe. And the Buddha responded something like, why the river Bahuka? What can the river Bahuka do? And the Brahmin, it was a Brahmin who was not one of his followers, but a Brahmin, a follower of another, of the Brahmanic tradition. And he said, well, many people feel that this river has the power to give liberation, to give merit, to wash away evil actions. And the Buddha's response to that was that he thought that the rivers don't have that kind of power, that rivers don't have the power to change our minds, to purify our minds, to cleanse the heart. But he said, in not exactly the words he said, but in the kind of general gist of what he said, was that in one whose heart is pure, one who acts in skillful ways, one whose mind is free is bathed with an inner bathing. So rather than bathing in a river, to bathe our minds in wholesomeness, in purity, bathe our hearts and minds in purity. And so this teaching can be understood as an exploration of what this inner bathing is. What is this inner bathing? As I was reflecting on this sutta, I was remembering a magnet that's actually down on the refrigerator here in the kitchen. And it says something like, don't seek peace from without, you'll find it within, or something like that. And that saying is attributed to the Buddha on the magnet. Now, I've never seen an actual phrase like that in the suttas, but in a way, I was wondering if that is a kind of a paraphrase of this, an interpretation of this teaching, that in the case of this Brahmin, he was seeking happiness and freedom from something outside of himself, thinking that something outside of himself would be able to have that power to free him. And the Buddha suggests rather that this inner bathing, this inner exploration, as a way towards freedom, towards peace. So this text then goes on to this explore the simile of the cloth, which is the title of the sutta. And the simile of the cloth is it's a simple analogy, basically, where the Buddha says, if you have a cloth, a piece of cloth, a piece of white cloth that is stained, that has, it's got dirt ground into it, or smudges, or, you know, oil, or just, you know, if it's stained in any way, if it's got marks on it, then if you take that cloth and put it into bathe it in a vat of dye, if you bathe that cloth in a vat of dye, he says that cloth won't take up the color evenly. The stains take up the color differently, and so he says that the cloth looks poorly dyed if the cloth begins with stains. And he says if that cloth is pure instead, if it's clear, free of stains, then when you bathe that cloth in dye, it naturally takes up the dye evenly and looks purely dyed. And he goes on to explore or explain that similarly with our minds. If our minds have clinging or holding, the term is often translated as defilement. But I believe it's the same term that's used for stain of cloth, the kalesa, I believe that term would also be used in a cloth that was stained. Same term is used for states of mind, qualities of mind that cover our hearts, that obstruct our hearts, that keep us tight and confused and contracted. The Buddha has a great list of these. I won't read them all, but I'll just give you a flavor of them. He says, what are the imperfections that defile the mind? Covetousness, ill will, anger, revenge, contempt, envy, deceit, fraud, presumption, arrogance, vanity, those kinds of states get in the way of the pure heart, of the heart that is at ease, at peace in the world. And so he says that part of our work is to, and he frames it, that we need to know about these defilements. We need to understand these states of mind that obstruct us. And that very understanding, my understanding of what he says here, he uses the word, understanding these defilements, we abandon them. One abandons them. So that word abandon is kind of interesting. You know, we might think of that as pushing something away or getting rid of something. We sometimes use the word abandon in ways that we don't approve of, like we talk about abandoning a child or something, abandoning something that you're supposed to be taking care of. But another use of the word abandon, and this is more the understanding I have of its use here, is something like we might abandon a car that had died. You know, it's like we'd abandon something when we see it no longer has any use or value for us. And that's my understanding of this aspect of this text, that we do the work of understanding these reactive states of mind, these challenging states of mind, these states of mind that contract our hearts. We explore and understand these, And as we explore and understand them, our heart begins to understand that they aren't serving us, that they don't help us, that we've misunderstood how we've misunderstood something, thinking that they help us, and that the clarity of the seeing and understanding these defilements begins to allow our hearts and minds to let them go very naturally. And so this is the beginning work of our practice. And in fact, from here, the sutta moves on to say, having abandoned the defilements, having abandoned these stains of mind, very naturally, confidence arises in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And Gil will actually speak a little bit more about these three in a few minutes. So confidence arises in the Buddha that he actually found a path to freedom. Confidence arises in the Dharma, the teachings, the path, the truth of our present moment experience. Confidence arises in the Sangha, the support, the community of practitioners that help us along the path. And so the understanding of these challenging states of mind, what we begin to see, and what I think you will all, many of you have already seen, and those of you who haven't sat retreat, I think you will see on this retreat, you will start to see how the heart can let go of difficult states very naturally. That it begins to understand a new way of being, a new way to be happy. So the seeing those, even small in small ways, seeing those shifts, seeing a shift, for instance, around anger, you know, just as one example, we might be observing anger in our experience and seeing just how caught we are by it and how painful it is and feeling the difficulty, the struggle of that. And then at some point in that experience, we may, with our mindfulness, meet it so fully that we recognize this is just anger. And there's a freedom, an ease, a peace, a space that happens around that experience that gives us in a moment a direct appreciation and a direct understanding of what it means to let go of how we hold so tightly to these states. It's a kind of a verified appreciation for what the Buddha offered, for the tools that the Buddha taught. We gain a sense of confidence in those teachings directly for ourselves. And this is this next natural unfolding. We do this work of understanding the defilements. The mind starts to abandon them, and confidence begins to come. We don't actually have to try to make the confidence happen. It begins to naturally arise for us. Confidence that this path is valuable. Confidence that we can engage. Confidence in the tools that the Buddha taught. From that confidence, the sutta goes on to say, with that confidence, having a sense of that confidence, we become inspired and glad, happy, and very naturally, the mind begins to quiet down and move towards states of concentration. The unfolding here, again, very natural follow-on from the previous unfolding. From there, the next aspect of the teaching is that the heart begins to understand and feel, let's say feel, the heart begins to feel the open-heartedness, the connection of love, of compassion, of joy, and of balance of mind. So this, again, is a natural unfolding, a natural movement. So in this text, the work that's done is really about understanding the defilements. And this points right back to the First Noble Truth, the truth of understanding our suffering, understanding our struggle, understanding the ways that we get caught. That if we have the dedication, the commitment to understand how we get caught, part of the reason I find this text so inspiring is because that, it says, that is the work. And from there, confidence naturally arises. From there, concentration naturally arises. From there, the open-hearted connection naturally arises. And from there, the inclining or the pointing is towards, and even then recognizing that these beautiful states of mind, the beautiful states of concentration, of tranquility, of rapture, of happiness, of gladness, of joy, of love, of compassion, of equanimity, that these two are not the goal. They feel very good. The mind gains balance and gains stability. And yet, the Buddha points even beyond that, that liberation here, he says, liberation isn't about getting anything. It's not about creating something, even these beautiful, wholesome states of mind. But rather, it's about release, about letting go. So we'll explore this teaching in some depth. Tomorrow, Gil will talk some about this understanding and abandoning the defilements. The next night, I'll talk about confidence and how that supports us in our practice. And then Gil will explore the unfolding of concentration. And then I'll explore the beautiful qualities of mind, of love, of compassion, of joy and equanimity, and how they support us in our practice. Because all of these things, while it is said to be a natural unfolding, I think what this text does is it points us in a direction. And we wouldn't necessarily find this direction on our own, but the Buddha points to, or this teaching points to, understand the defilements and then head in this direction. Head towards confidence in the teachings. Head towards concentration and stability of mind. Head towards love. And then turn back and let go. The last talk that Gil will give will be on freedom, or something like that. So now Gil will talk a little about the refuges and the precepts.